Hello and welcome to VHTB, your guide to the talent, culture, and finance side of the space startup ecosystem. My name is Seika Major of Ad Astra Talent Advisors, and I'm joined by Matt Jertsen from Better Everyday Studios.
Hello.
And Justice Killian of Space Capital.
Hello.
Today, we are diving into a topic I'm very curious to hear both of your perspectives on, looking at technical skills or people skills, which is more important? And I want to kick it off by talking about how space startups and engineering programs effectively identify the need for technical skills versus soft skills and what strategies best uncover these gaps. So Matt, love to hear from you a bit here on kind of, identifying the gaps and need for growing those skills.
Yeah, this is honestly, Seika, the number one thing that comes up in the training industry itself is needs identification. And the number one problem that most trainers suffer from or training programs suffer from is a lack of needs analysis ahead of time. And I think it leads to way too many things being labeled training problems or technical training problems when there shouldn't be. I actually used to have kind of a whole checklist that I would ask folks of when they'd say, hey, we need a training. And I think the important thing for you to do is to identify all the other things that could be causing the problem. Because it all needs to start with what is like the performance gap, the company performance gap, not the individual performance gap. What is the thing going wrong in the business that needs to be solved? I think that's usually the first thing. And then from there, you can ask a whole bunch of questions. Like the number one question, the first question that I often ask is this one person having a problem or a bunch of people having a problem? Because I think most people have seen the situations where it's, you know, somebody overcharged something on the company card or ran into something with a company car, and then all of a sudden everybody has to do training because it's a training problem. When really it's just like an individual performance management problem.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Another thing would be, is the process, whatever you're trying to do documented well enough?
Okay.
Because very often things aren't documented properly. And so you think people aren't able to follow the process when they really just don't even know what the process is. That might still involve training, but it's a different kind of training. Now you need like technical writing training instead of training in whatever this specific job is. And so I think, honestly, those are the big picture two things that I would say most often is you have to start with some company gap, company problem that you are trying to solve. And then it's kind of like innocent until proven guilty. You should assume it's not a training problem until you prove it's a training problem. And you should be kind of investigating all the other avenues, whether it's documentation, whether it's just the manager not performance managing them. Again, that's an instance where it could be a training problem, but it's just a different training problem. That's kind of how I start with it. I don't know if that makes sense or if you have follow-up questions.
I definitely do have follow-up questions. First, how often does it come up? This seems like a very relevant issue that startups would, and the, you know, people who are listening to this would be interested in learning more about. How often does it show up for you that the thing that needs to be trained is how managers can performance manage the issues that are well documented, that there is a pattern?
I think that's 90% of the time. Yeah. I mean, it's so much comes back to some form of, you know, communication failing on the top of the manager on behalf of the manager. They don't even know what they themselves, the manager, don't know what the expectations are. They didn't take the time to write them down. They assumed the other person knew what they were and didn't communicate them properly. They're not following up on, you know, checking in on whether or not they're meeting those things. I 100% believe the vast majority of problems come down to that. It's those manager shortcomings. Yeah, that happens a lot.
I mean, I could tell you from the investor side and sitting at the board that the tendency is to look at the people and say they caused the problem and not see the fact that, business management operation has created an environment where this, is more of a systemic problem or a repeatable problem than it is the one individual. So it's really, I love the way that you sort of approach that qualification early on. What sort of feedback do you get like from whoever you're working with, whether it be the executive team or managers, when that sort of aha moment happens?
I mean, it's tricky to even get that aha moment because there is so often a gap and a lag. And I'll be frank with you. Since I started my business two and a half years ago, I often get approached by people who ask me, like, how do you convince people who don't believe in training that training is important? And I often say I don't. Like, I just go talk to someone else in many ways. And inside companies, for people inside companies, that's often advice that I give too, is rather than, because so often trainers inside of companies are struggling to get a seat at the table or be relevant. And so often the what I think the correct guidance is it's not about going and banging on doors and trying to convince people that you're right. You're not going to do that. Instead, you have to give proof. And so you have to find managers who already believe in training. Maybe they came from GE, they went through some executive leadership program or something. Find people who already want your help and just serve them really well and prove the impact over time. And especially, and so that's why it's kind of difficult to get the aha moment, because especially with things like leadership, that can take a really long time. And especially in the chaotic world of startups, there's so many confounding factors that it can be tricky to really say, like, this is the reason, unless you're willing to give it a little bit of time. And going back to why you have to be incredibly clear about what the business problem is that you're trying to solve. If there's a really clear, I'll give an example of an organization that I was working with where we started off talking to them about training for a whole role. It was like leads in this one section of the company. So we need lead training for these people. And what does that even mean? Like, I met with tons of people and we talked through all kinds of stuff and we created a program that was like a 3-day program. And I think it was good, but there's really no way I'm ever going to be able to measure the effectiveness. And I contrast that with another group in their company that we were working with, where after the experience of going after this like really big, broad, amorphous thing, we started talking with this other group and they're responsible for the billing. And it turns out that there was this, like warranty code that basically no one is using. And the company could be missing out on millions of dollars per year because people aren't using this particular warranty code. And so that's something where we can say, oh, I'm going to train people how to use that warranty code. And it's really easy for me to judge Q1 to Q2 to Q3 whether or not people are using it, because it's going to show up. And so the only way that you can get that aha moment is if you have really clearly defined, this is what we're trying to do.
How it's so interesting. How much of the work that you're doing then, Matt, when you are called in and asked to support in training is identifying the problem. Like it sounds like that's a
That's the
big
thing.
chunk. Yeah.
That's the thing. I
Yeah.
mean, I'm sure you see this as well in hiring. Like, how much of hiring is really figuring out what is
Yep.
the role you're hiring for and what does this person need to do? It's really similar.
So much of the work we do. Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
I would argue at investing as well, we're saying, what are the most important things to do over the next 18 to 24 months? And then from that, you say, who do we hire and what priorities do we set? And if you're not working from the right milestones or the right goals, the capital, the people, the resources, the time, none of it's really going to be allocated in the right direction.
Yeah, so this takes us a little off the topic of kind of what we're focused on, but I'm curious, is the same pattern reflected in the work that you do, Justice? Like when you come in to look at investing and you're working with, what are the milestones? How much funding do you need? What's your team made of? Like, how much coaching are you doing on helping them gain clarity in on those things before you're even making decisions and getting
So oftentimes, it's pretty well known what you need to do, and oftentimes we're trying to demonstrate the capabilities, the competence of the executive team, the founding team, to be able to build some software or build some hardware and take it to market. Like at the early stages, those are the most important things. And so there are very concrete milestones to be able to do that. If it's a satellite, we've got to put that satellite in orbit. It's got to see first light. Ideally, it's got to hit, the majority of its mission objectives, and we could shut it down safely. That would be a perfect case, right? Another example then would be, can the team actually go out and find other really great people to surround themselves with and demonstrate that they can get people equivalent or even better than them to surround around a vision and sort of all row and execute in a common direction? And the combination of those two things, those technical and sort of hiring decisions, should then translate to a need in a market, right? Somebody should be willing to pay for that capability. And if they're not, there's real concern. And so typically there's a very objective threshold to go from sort of seed to Series A. Historically, it had been about $1 million in some type of revenue. Now that bar is getting higher as capital is more constrained. People want to see more proof point that there's market demand. But, those are sort of the constraints that we work in. And then it's dialing it to the specific company and to the people that they have there to be able to, appropriately execute.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kind of bringing it back to the initial question, I would be interested to know your take, Justice. This idea of, technical versus people skills. What do you see when you're evaluating organizations or as you're helping them grow, like where do you see those being the limiting factors more often?
It's really interesting. You often don't know these things up front. So in hindsight, we'll sort of reflect on an investment that may have failed. And
Sure.
so I think, being a deep tech investor, we rotate very heavily into the track record of execution for the executive teams and what they've built and what environments that they've built in. Particularly at like the CEO, CTO level, I think we under sort of appreciate the storytelling, the vision setting, the ability to inspire, influence, communicate clearly, listen, to team. Oftentimes in a very technical founder or technical leadership, some of those capabilities are sort of more subdued or harder to develop, or there hasn't been as much opportunity in their career to that point to develop those things. And so when I look back at, investments that we've made that have failed, that has been a common pattern, particularly with very technical founders. So both are super essential. When I stopped and sort of looked at this question, technical or leadership or technical or people skills, I mean, the simple answer is both. I think it is an evolution over your career. Anybody, whether it be business or engineering, you really should come into the job world with a strong technical foundation. You should build and mature that by working, if it's accounting is a great foundation for any business, leader, right? Mechanicals are great for an engineer or depending on what area you're specializing in. Mature that, develop it, start to see the systems at a much larger level, how the pieces fit together. Then you're going to start developing into sort of that managerial role where you're influencing people, communicating, setting goals, giving feedback. And ideally, you'll manage pretty large teams before you step into that executive role and started to hone some of that experience. But that's not always the case, right? And so that is a lesson that we've learned. The ability to manage people, manage large teams, communicate clearly, willing, active listening, ability to give feedback. These are soft skills that some people just, can make it to very senior levels in their career, but never actually develop.
Yeah, and I mean, in what you were talking about earlier, Matt, saying And what you're saying now, Justice, like these soft skills, these communication skills, right? How many problems are identified where organizations go, we need to bring in training, and you realize it's lack of clarity or lack of communication, right? Not having clarity around expectations, not communicating those effectively, unclear about how to performance manage teammates so that they do have a clear understanding of what their KPIs are, what they're being graded against, and how to improve those areas. So it's really interesting looking at, in the hard tech that we work in, where you have to have a technical foundation, you have to have those technical skills, and yet the soft skills are really important for a thriving business as well. So yeah, in summary, both, which is a little bit of a cheating answer, but here we are.
Yeah, it. I mean, and to just highlight this, there's I, when we were looking at this question, I looked up a study that I remembered from about a year ago that came from McKinsey. It's not exactly what we're talking about, but it's close enough where the perform or the report is called Performance Through People. And what they did is they broke companies down into goal-oriented, like performance-oriented companies, so like more of the technical stuff, people-oriented companies, so the soft stuff, or companies that did a bo that did them both. They kind of like identified a bunch of different practices. And what they found is that the companies that were able to do to merge both, do performance with some caring as well, performance focus with some caring, were by far the best performing companies. They had a 4.2x greater likelihood to outperform peer companies within their industry. They had like $1.1 billion greater profit than average.
Wow.
So it really is that mix. Both of them are necessary but insufficient if you want to achieve the greatest outcomes.
And that's echoed in the book Radical Candor, right? I think is reflecting that you got to be clear and, honest and kind, right? And there was a recent TED talk I saw that had the same message of what makes people most likable in business settings is being competent and warm, right? And it's the two factors, right? It's being able to have clarity around expectations, drive people to their highest performance, and also have the empathy and understanding of the entire human factor so that people are able to receive the performance feedback that you're giving without defenses flying up and feeling helpless. So really powerful stuff. Yeah, thank you both so much. Really wonderful insights. Love hearing from you on this topic and looking forward to our next conversation.